Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Are you ready?
Let's clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
It's gone from suck to blow.
What?
47-22. Tied for first place. That's your Denver Nuggets. Congratulations to the Denver Nuggets, but I'd love the approach of the Nuggets. I love the teamwork. I love the atmosphere. I love the chemistry. I love the deflection. When people talk to Michael Malone about being coach of the year, he's talking about equipment guys. He's talking about security guys. He's talking about the team. He's talking about everybody other than himself. And that's the key to a great championship organization. When you care more about those that you play for and the people on that staff than you care about yourself. And that's the special thing the Nuggets have going right now. And I'm telling you what, I love the approach last night. Hey, you won. We're going to celebrate tonight, but we're not done yet. We're not going to celebrate this thing with champagne. We'll celebrate with beer, for crying out loud, because we still have a ton of work to do. So for the Nuggets, man, this is great. Don't let off the gas. Keep the pedal to the metal. Don't let anybody chase you down. Don't let anybody basically take you away from the goal of being that number one overall seed, because I think it's important. Home court is important. The way you play, the style with which you play in the Mile High City is important. And I tell you what, just a congratulatory shout out to the Denver Nuggets. Keep doing what you're doing when you're getting them tennies on the hard court.
That was awesome.
Clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
Yeah, you know, now that they're in the playoffs for the first time in 6 years, you gotta do better than the tennies on the hard court. I just don't know about the tennies thing. You know.
You don't like tennies?
I'm not a tennies. It's not about tennies.
You're a sneakers guy.
Sneakers, yeah. Put your Chuck Taylors on the hard court or something like that.
You're a sneaker. This is like Coke, and this is like the Coke, soda, or pop. Like tennies or sneakers.
I've never gone sneakers. I know that we're hungering for the national media to show the Nuggets some respect. So here you go. Here you go. They just kicked off, SportsCenter just kicked off their 7 o'clock, well, for 9 o'clock hour back there. And they started with the Nuggets. Mm-hmm. Now, it was the hook was Isaiah Thomas's return to Boston.
Right.
But they still ended up showing Nugget highlights, and they finished with Michael Malone walking into the locker room with a bottle of water, making his speech, announcing that they are heading to the playoffs, and then they did the big water celebration where everybody douses each other with water. So very, very cool. Congratulations to the Nuggets. 6 years in the making. And last night's win was so impressive because they got Boston's best shot. You know, this was a Celtics team that lost to the Nuggets out here. They were all butthurt because Jamal Murray went for 50 points, had 48, was going for 50 even after they had backed off. And Isaiah was making his return. It was an emotional night. And it was a tie game going into the fourth quarter. And on the road, the Nuggets outscore them 34-25. And Breeze home with a 9-point victory.
Yeah, and
easily one of their most impressive wins of the season.
Easy. And I tell you what, down that fourth quarter, I mean, how many times do you see like a wide open Joker knocking down a three? Or, you know, I tell you what, they do the extra things to get, like I said, and I've said this a bunch this season, to go from a good shot to a great shot. And you saw that happen to them several times going down the stretch in the fourth quarter where the Joker's just knocking down, I mean, just knocking down threes. Just, I mean, wide open, nobody within 10 feet of him knocking down threes. They're a fun team to watch, Mike. They're going to be a tough out come playoff time. I look at this stretch, you know, you've got what, 13 games left, something like that? 12, 13 games left. This is a stretch that's important. It's important to be able to push through and to finish. I think finishing strong is a really important thing. I know that we talk about load management and we talk about all those things, but I just know going down the stretch, the way you approach games, like I've been in those situations where, you know, we've been number one seeds and you start worrying about, well, what we got, you know, we got to take care of our players and make sure guys are healthy. And I just know how important it is to stay Like, every sport is this way. You watch teams, number one seeds overall, that take the last 2 weeks of the season off, and then they have the bye week, and they come out, and they're flat. They don't play well. They get bounced out of the playoffs in the NFL. In baseball, you see a team that's just cruising, right? It's cruising. And they sweep in the playoffs, and then they wait because they swept and the opposite, you know, conference is going a seven game series. And they got to sit around for a week waiting, you know, waiting for the World Series. And inevitably, the team that has to wait, that swept through the playoffs, ends up losing. And finishing strong during these last 13, finishing strong to me is a really important aspect of what the Nuggets need to focus on.
Speaking of your friends over at ESPN, they're coming after Peyton Manning.
That's right.
ESPN president Jimmy Pitaro and content chief. Boy, DeHuff, you'd make a great content chief here.
Yes.
Man. Content chief Connor Schell made a trip to Denver on March 11th to meet with Manning, who has been mentioned before for a broadcast role, but it's unclear whether Manning is interested in pursuing a career as an analyst at this time. I can't see Peyton doing this. Here's why. One, because I think his main goal is to become an owner.
Right.
Two, Peyton has, one thing we learned about Peyton while he was here, he has such a respect for the game. And those that have played the game, those that came before, he's a student of the game, he understands the history of the game, and I think he has too much respect for the game and the players who play it to go on national television and be critical of anybody.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. The other thing is you're so deep, having called games the last 2 years, he is so detailed, right? And wants to explain things in depth. That's why what he does for ESPN right now, he breaks down the quarterback, what the quarterback is looking for. You've seen these 2-3 minute versions.
Yeah, detail.
Yeah. And it's a great name for it, right? Detail, because that describes Peyton Manning. You don't have time in a booth oftentimes to be detailed. And I don't know, like I can't do justice to what's going on here in the 20 seconds that I get. And so I don't know that. Like, I feel like there's a part of him that would really bother. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's such a detailed guy. I'll never forget when he first got to Denver, I was in the Broncos training room. It was like OTAs or something. And he pulls me aside and he's like, hey, listen, and he talked about my son, Daniel, about his pitching. You know, how's he doing? What's going through? You know, blah, blah, blah. I said he's having some injury problems. He's like, okay, here's a number for this guy, these guys that help me with my neck type of thing, right? Just crazy. The amount of detail he knew, just in my situation. And then he went through, okay, how do you prepare to do what you do on television? Take me through like what your week is like. And I sat there for 20 minutes detailing kind of this is what I do. This is how I go about doing my thing. It was just fascinating that he is that, like, he's constantly thinking about things. I just don't know that he feels that he would feel like he could do the game justice, the game that he loves justice, in those short little bursts.
Coming up, Tail the Tape, Nuggets, Warriors, as they go for the number one seed in the West. And Joe Flacco, what are the realistic expectations for what you, Broncos country, expects from Flacco's time here in Denver? That's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Expectations. You know, we talk about them all the time. The Broncos seem to be sending the message that they're in win-now mode. They're not interested in rebuilding. So what does that mean for Joe Flacco now that he's landed right in the hot seat? You know, I don't know what the, you've been out to Baltimore before. I've been to Baltimore a few times, Mark. I don't know what the sports landscape is like in Baltimore when it comes to the Ravens versus the other teams around there. But we know what it's like out here to be the quarterback of the Denver Broncos. Some guys can handle it. A lot of them can't step right up, Case Keenum. But what about Joe Flacco, and what about the expectations that he feels he's facing?
Winning football games? Listen, I've been in the league long enough that to know success is nothing but winning football games. I don't care if you're a young team, if you think you're rebuilding. You know, you go win 6, 7, 8 games, that's not success. I don't care, you know, like I said, I don't care what the expectations were from people. At some point, everybody's real expectations are to go win games and be in the playoffs. And then from there, see what happens and go win a Super Bowl. You know, that's what everybody's trying to do, and that's what I'm trying to do the rest of my career is win the Super Bowl.
All right. Tough talk. Brave talk.
Mm-hmm.
Lofty talk. I like it. But if John Elway is correct and Joe Flacco is still in his prime and still has, let's say, 4 good years of football left in him, then what has to happen here during those 4 years for the Flacco era to be considered a success?
Well, I think you have to, obviously, you've got to turn the offense around. You've got to be a productive offense. You've got to give your football team an opportunity to compete for a playoff spot. I mean, I think those things are given, Mike. They have to happen. And then after that, you know, once you get in the playoffs, it just depends. I mean, we've seen it here with a pretty anemic offense, ride a hot defense to a world championship. So we've seen that happen here. We've seen it happen other places as well. But you've got to be a pretty balanced team to win a world championship to me. You've got, you know, everybody says, well, you hear all the cliches, defense wins championships, offense sells tickets and defense wins championships, whatever. You know, you hear all that crap, but the bottom line is complete or balanced football teams are the teams that get into the playoffs. And then once you're in the playoffs, Mike, some good fortune, some great play on a dominant play on one side of the ball, can help you get there. Again, I'll continue to look at last year's playoffs as kind of a indicator in what it takes. And that is dominant line of scrimmage play. You get to the playoffs and it's not about, you know, throwing the football, and it's not about all that, you know, all the stuff that we see during the regular season, the excitement of, you know, Monday night Chiefs versus Rams and 54-51, whatever it was. We get to the playoffs and it's a different style and the weather is different and teams that dominate the line of scrimmage just win those games. That's how it works. So, they've got to be able to do those things, but Joe Flacco gives them, I mean, think about the AFC and world championships in the AFC. For Flacco is one of what, 4 guys who have won a title out of the AFC?
Yep.
Between Peyton Manning, Roethlisberger, Brady, and Joe Flacco in the last, like, almost 2 decades,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you've got 1 of 4 in the last almost 2 decades on your squad that actually has a world championship ring.
All right, so let's say 4 years. Four years, Joe Flacco in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those years are playoff years? Gotta be, like, at least 2, right?
Oh, at least, yeah.
In order for to be considered a success, are you, okay, 2 playoff appearances, are you saying at least 1 of those is an AFC championship run? At least, yeah, getting to the AFC championship game?
I think you've got to have, if you're saying, hey, 4 years, he's going to be in his prime for 4 years, you got to have 3 playoff runs in there.
Mm.
And you've got to be, one of those playoff runs has got to be an AFC championship.
Wow. You are setting the bar relatively high. Not relative, you are setting the bar high. So 4 years starting now, 3 of them in the playoffs, 1 in the AFC championship game.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's wrong with that? Because you basically said, hey, we're not going after
the quarterback. I think 2 playoff, I don't think that this is a playoff team next year. So, then you're telling, and I don't think you think so either. So you're thinking if those 3 playoff years are going to happen, they're going to happen years 2, 3, and 4, right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, but understand this, Mike. I mean, Like, to me, the Colts weren't a playoff team last. They started, what, 1-5?
The Colts, yes.
And they found a way into the playoffs. Like, I didn't think they had going into the season a playoff roster, but they drafted well. They solidified their offensive line. They started running the ball, protecting their quarterback. They did a great job with that. As their quarterback got more confidence in his health and what he was doing, he started playing a lot better, which led to, you know, better defensive performances and less time on the football field. And all of a sudden, you know, a 1-5 team is finding themselves into the playoffs. Like, I would sit there and say, based on what we've had here in the past and based on the direction we've gone in free agency. So you've solidified the back end of your defense. I think that's a great thing. I mean, I think that's an incredible thing. We have seen linebackers come in. We saw it last year in Chicago under Vic Fangio. Linebackers come in and perform at an incredibly high level as rookies. And I think that's probably the direction this team is going to go in. So, I mean, that's a good thing. We've got bookend pass rushers that are as good as there is in this league with Von Miller and Bradley Chubb. That's a really good thing. Now, you flip over to the other side. You got a quarterback, albeit not a top-tier franchise quarterback, but a franchise quarterback nonetheless. You know, like a lot of other franchise quarterbacks, needs help around him. You went and got yourself a right tackle that, you know, is a phenomenal athlete. He's a raw, in my mind, he's a raw player. But you also got yourself the best offensive line coach in football, or one of the best two or three offensive line coaches in football. So, I mean, you've made some incredible moves that should give you as a Bronco fan or Bronco country a lot of optimism. And I share that optimism. But I'm also at a point where saying, okay, that's great. These things are great, but I know they're going to have to have a couple of guys that pan out exceptionally well in the draft, and they still have to build an offensive line. Just having one of the great coaches that coaches offensive line, that to me is not quite enough, Mike.
All right. Well, it's encouraging that you're going that big. 3 out of 4 years in the playoffs, won a AFC championship run. Your expectation while Joe Flacco is here. What is yours? Let us know. RamosLaw.com text line 303-713-1043. Don't forget to get to our website, 1043thefan.com, and get signed up for the Breaks Plus Bracket Challenge, where you pick all of the games coming up in the tournament. Everyone's going to be talking about their brackets. You want to make sure you're included. So get in on the biggest bracket challenge in all of Denver. It's right here where you're going to have a chance to play against your favorite fan hosts and take your shot at winning the grand prize of $5,000. So get those picks in. Get them in before Thursday when the games start. And good luck. Go to 1043thefan.com to get all that done. You've seen a lot of players, a lot of pro athletes, a lot of retirement ceremonies, a lot of tears. But I don't know if anybody's ever quite retired the way this guy did yesterday. Details in Four Down Territory coming up next.
Are you ready for some football?
This is Four Down Territory.
Words cannot say how much I truly love you.
Donkey Kong Sue.
Double team, leaping high, falling hard.
No source fiesta.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. First down.
It's been a little rough, but, you know, I'm taking this time to, you know, really get my body right, really get my mind right, and I think it'll be beneficial.
Well, Brandon Marshall is receiving interest from the Oakland Raiders, of all people. Does B. Marsh, who definitely does not seem to be in the Broncos' plans, does he make sense to the Raiders?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Raiders defensively were a team that struggled last year. I mean, they struggled all over the place, not just defensively. But, yeah, he definitely makes sense. And they're trying to make improvements over there. B. Marsh is a guy that's going to show up, going to be on time, going to work his butt off, and is a good football player. So, I mean, they certainly need character individuals over there in Oakland. And I think that, especially after signing Antonio Brown, like, they need character in that building. I think he'd be great for them. It'd be I mean, it'd be a little, I don't know, would it be, it wouldn't be as hard as seeing Bill Romanowski go finish his career at the Raiders, would it?
No, no, but I guess.
How much did you hate Romo after he left? Because you loved him when he was here. How much did you hate? Did you hate him?
No, like, he helped deliver two championships. You can't.
Right.
You can't be so blinded by your hate of the Raiders, especially the Raiders at that point, that you let it cloud his contributions to two championships here. Nah, no way. Why? Did it bother you?
No. Didn't bother me at all.
The thing about,
I mean, I still hate the Raiders, well, but yes, it didn't bother me.
No. But the thing about B-Mart is either the Raiders are getting him, would be going after him mainly because of what he could bring from a leadership, a culture. Hey, you've been part of a Super Bowl. We want more guys like that here. Because if they truly think he can play and still play at a high level, then why aren't the Broncos bringing back B. Marsh, who would love to stay here?
Well, I mean, he's had, I mean, last year was injury issues with the knee. I mean, I think.
So he can't really play that. I mean, he could play, but he can't play like he used to, so the Raiders would be more interested in the intangibles with him.
Well, I think I still think he can. I still think he can play. I think there's the intangible part is part of it. The other thing is the Raiders are going to have to, you know, like, from a salary standpoint, I mean, it's salary off the books. I understand he's a free agent, but you're probably willing to go somewhere else on a discounted rate. Now the Broncos are just done. It's part of what you do as a NFL franchise. You change your roster. You move on. That happens. And there's plenty of guys who teams thought couldn't play anymore that went on to have brilliant careers elsewhere. So, yeah, that's just the way the NFL works.
Next in four down territory.
Second down. I must do what's right. Sure as Kilimanjaro rises like a lift.
Yeah. Sometimes the headline writes itself.
Yeah.
I knew. I didn't even have to make this suggestion to Millennial Ben and DeHuff. I knew that they would deliver, and they did. Halati Nada.
Halodi.
Halodi, excuse me. Tomato, tomato. Halati, yeah. Halodi. Announced his retirement yesterday from the NFL atop Mount Kilimanjaro.
Mm-hmm.
19,340 feet high. He got to the top and he unfurled a banner that said, I'm retiring from the NFL on top. Not bad.
That is pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
How did you announce your retirement?
I just quit.
Just faded off into the background. Right?
I'm done. By the way, though, you know what else is cool? The lyrics from Toto on that.
How sure?
Sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti.
Oh,
are you kidding? You want to talk about wordsmithing a phrase together?
Chill factor 10.
Right? Like, you cannot listen to Africa from Toto driving down the road without turning it up and singing along. Amazing lyrics.
It's impossible.
No.
It's impossible. I dare anybody to do it.
I dare anybody to even try.
It's science. Next in four down territory.
Third down.
It was last minute. I didn't expect the Ravens to even give me a chance. I didn't hear about the Ravens throughout the whole process. I actually thought I was going somewhere else, but they just came at the last minute, and I'm very appreciative for the opportunity.
Yeah, you know where that somewhere else almost was for Earl Thomas before he agreed to a deal with the Ravens? It was the Chiefs.
Really?
He thought he was going to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So the Chiefs lose out on Earl Thomas. Mm-hmm. They've parted ways with Eric Berry, D. Ford,
Justin Houston.
Justin Houston. They have lost Kareem Hunt. They might be losing Tyreek Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, what you had to say yesterday, the idea that the Broncos have pulled even with the Chiefs is starting to take on a little bit of weight, a little bit of heft,
a little new meaning, right? I'm telling you, I am Like, I understand they still offensively, they've also lost their starting center. He left. I think Mitch Morse went to, Buffalo. I mean, they've been pretty decimated here in the free agent market. And this Tyreek Hill thing, that will reverberate through that roster. You think about the way Andy Reid gets you playing east and west so he can dissect you in the middle of the field, and how he uses the speed of Tyreek Hill, not only vertically, but horizontally, behind the line of scrimmage. Listen, he's a unique cat, and I told you this, talking to the Baltimore Ravens and Wink Martindale, who's their defense coordinator. He said, listen, man, there's a lot of fast guys in the NFL. That dude's the fastest guy I have ever seen, like, on the field speed. Like, you watch on film and you know he's fast, but on the field, he's the fastest guy I've ever seen. Like, what he opens up for everybody else within that, you know, within that offense is huge. If, you know, depending upon what they find in their investigation, if that guy misses a significant chunk of the season, and I think if they find him guilty, you know, of child abuse or whatever, I think he'll miss the entire season. Like, I think the Broncos are currently pulling even with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
Bortles, play fake, dropping, looking, fires deep toward the end zone, caught by D.D. Westbrook, into the end zone, touchdown. Bortles to D.D. Westbrook for the score, and the Jags are on the board.
Jags radio. Blake Bortles has landed with the L.A. Rams.
Mm-hmm.
A one-year deal. Is this a good move for Blake Bortles? More importantly, is it a good move for the Rams?
Yeah, I think it's a great move for Blake Bortles. I think Bortles needs to be in a situation where, like, he's got a year of, it's very Nick Foles-esque in Kansas City. Let's get you a football rehab year. You know, let's get you out of that environment that became toxic. Let's let you get into the coverage school that Sean McVay runs in the off season. I think it's a great thing to see, to get a different perspective. I think this is a great situation for Blake Bortles.
I'm going to call him now, Blake Beep Beep Bortles. So my man D-Mac likes to call me Beep Beep because he insists that my strategy of drafting khaki pants quarterbacks is that all you're doing is drafting a backup.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'd rather spend a second or third round pick on a backup than the third overall pick in the draft. Let this once again be a cautionary reminder to everybody who insists that if you want to find a franchise quarterback, you gotta take one in the top five. Ladies and gentlemen, I submit one Blake Bortles.
Yeah. Yeah. And oftentimes, I mean, here's the other thing about drafting a quarterback that high. When you're a bad football team and you put a guy in that position, the guy, you never know what the guy might have been. We don't know what David Carr might have been had he been in a better situation. We don't know what Patrick Ramsey might have been had he been in a better situation as opposed to going to the Redskins. Like J.P. Lossman, what might he have been? Like, you don't know what he might have been. We know what he became. And anytime you're drafting in the top three, usually you have a pretty meager roster that surrounds that particular individual. So,
and your point is that Bortles had it all.
Yeah,
he had it all. He played for old school coaches who believed in running the football. You couldn't have had a better defense. But this is what happens when you panic and reach for quarterbacks. And you end up sticking with those quarterbacks longer than you should because you feel you have to make the investment pay off. You know what you do? You ruin a window that the Jaguars had to win a Super Bowl. They had a window and they blew it.
You don't think that window's still open?
No.
With Nick Foles? Isn't that going to be interesting to see exactly how Nick Foles plays within that system?
You're funny. That'll do it for Four Down Territory, a tour around the NFL, bringing to you each and every morning at 7:30. All right, tale of the tape time. Coming down the stretch, forget about the number two seed. That's already locked up. I'm talking about let's go for number one. What are the Nuggets' chances of overtaking the Warriors? That's next. So much came out of Friday's conversations with Vic Fangio, John Elway, Juwan James, Kareem Jackson. I had to go back and listen to pick up some of the nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
More on them in a moment. Some of the nuggets hidden kind of in what they talked about. Clearly, there were the headlines that everyone was talking about, but wanted to go back and listen again. And Kareem Jackson, very, very interested in what Kareem Jackson is going to be able to bring to this defense. And he prides himself. He talked about how he prides himself on his versatility.
To be honest with you, man, I really don't prefer any position. I mean, for me, it's just all about going out and wherever the coaches want me, wherever they need me for that week. I pride myself on being versatile, and I enjoy it. You know, playing the safety and getting a chance to see everything and getting a chance to fly from sideline to sideline, man, I definitely enjoy that. Also playing corner and trying to get a chance to, you know, read some receivers and, you know, getting a chance to jump some routes, man. And the physical aspect, you know, from both sides, playing corner and safety, you know, I definitely enjoy that as well. So, man, I just pride myself on being versatile, and I know it can definitely help us.
All right, there's Kareem Jackson. He was on with Stokely and Zach. So, as much as people go gaga over the idea that offenses are all modern and they're all creative and they're all innovative, hey, we're seeing defensively defenses kind of keep pace in terms of some of the versatile things they can do and how safeties can play corner and corners can play safety and safeties can almost play linebacker. So it's giving defenses a chance to do a lot more. I want to ask you this because you have a wealth of knowledge based on what you just did this past year covering the NFL and covering a lot of teams. If the idea is that the Broncos can be really, really creative and innovative on defense, how creative can they be? Who would you say is the most creative team on defense you covered this season, and what made them so creative?
Without question, it was the Baltimore Ravens. And it wasn't close. You know, it comes down to this. I think when, and I always say this, you know, I watch film and I'll talk to myself, you know me, I'm always talking to myself, but you're watching film and you watch a team get beat on disguise and you're like, well, that's where disguise gets you beat. Like sometimes it's just best to line up and play. Right? Line up and show them what you're doing and just trust that our players are better than your players. And that was really kind of one of Wade Phillips' strengths to his defense. We're going to execute exceptionally well. We're going to line up. We're going to play cover one. And that's what we're going to do. And we have better players than you have. And we believe in this. That was the no fly zone. You talk to guys who played the no fly zone and it was 90% of the time they're in man coverage. And then, you know, you see teams do a lot of multiple things, you know, multiple coverages. But Baltimore did a better job from a disguise standpoint, blitz disguise, changing things up. And just having things that don't necessarily make sense or aren't necessarily don't look sound at the start, but because their players are smart, and because they execute well, they don't get themselves into trouble. Now, to do that, you have to have, in my opinion, you have to have, one, super smart players, two, versatile players, players that understand the game. And you have it. Kareem Jackson is one of those guys. He mentioned he's played safety. He gets to see, you know, the entire field sideline to sideline from back there. He's played corner. He's done all those things. Chris Harris Jr. is as savvy a football player as I've ever been around. I'll go back to that play he made on fourth down and one in the AFC Championship where they try to sneak Edelman across they try to run Edelman on a little flanker slide, on fourth and one off of play action. And literally 100 times out of 100 times, that would have been a first down conversion. And Chris Harris Jr. came off his coverage. He's in man. They ran a shallow cross, and he just came off that coverage because he saw it coming, and he makes that tackle in the backfield. It's one of the most phenomenal plays to this day that I have seen on film. And it just was incredible. But you've got to have that kind of savvy understanding of football
to be able to make a play like that. And like Baltimore was the one team where even though they disguised more than anybody and they did things that just at their surface don't look sound, they didn't hurt themselves. They were one of the elite defenses in football.
It's interesting you say Baltimore, because when I asked you the question, I wonder if you would have said Chicago, because you did do a Chicago game. So are you telling me that a Vic Fangio coached Chicago defense, it was very good, obviously, very good defense, but it wasn't exactly cutting edge?
Cutting edge. I'm saying exceptionally sound. But like, I'm not going to sit there and say, oh yeah, really complicated to watch them. You know, that's not how it was. And like when I look at their defense, you know, I look at it from outstanding players. They play up to me. Now again, I'm not in those defensive meeting rooms and I'm sure it's more complicated than my simple brain, you know, sees it. But to me, his defense is more about, we're going to out execute you. We know what we're doing. We have exceptional players and we're going to play sound, you know, mistake free football. It's not going to be complicated. It's kind of a keep it simple, stupid process. And I believe that if you've got really good players, and you're simplistic, but you're great at executing it. You can be very successful doing that. And I've told you this many times watching Chicago. There's nobody in my mind that comes to mind of all the teams that I studied during the course of the football season that played more base defense to nickel fronts because of the exceptional nature of the linebackers they had. There's nobody that did more of that than Vic Fangio and the Chicago Bears.
It has been 6 long years since the Nuggets have been in the playoffs, but they're back. And, you know, even though we knew this was coming with the outstanding season they've had, it's still pretty cool that last night they officially clinched it with their win in Boston last night. And Michael Malone led the bottle water champagne bath that everybody does now, dousing each other with water bottles, shaking them all up. It was a great scene inside the Nuggets locker room. And even though they're in the playoffs, Malone says the Nuggets still have much, much more to accomplish.
I told the guys after, you know, we should feel good about this. I think life is about celebrating moments. I learned that from my mother and father. So if you don't celebrate it, you know, we've worked so hard. But it's a fine line, Mike. You can celebrate it, enjoy the moment, but then, okay, turn the page. 13 games to go. Got to go into Washington now until you get another win. We're not satisfied, as I said earlier, with just being a playoff team. We're not going to just eke into the playoffs. We want to go in there playing the best basketball of the season and see if we can get home court advantage. You know, and that's a hell of a challenge for us, but, you know, why not us? And I think these guys believe in that, and I look forward to that challenge.
You know, they have built this patiently, methodically, slowly. You know, we've waited, but it appears that we're on the cusp of the payoff to all this. But, boy, isn't it obvious to you know the dynamics of a team. It doesn't matter what sport you play. You can recognize when a team is together. And boy, you look at the relationship that connectivity. Oh my God. You're rubbing off on me. You're right. It is connectivity. Well, why did I get it? It's like I rejuvenized. I blame
rejuvenized
you.
Rejuvenized is a word that needs to be used more.
Here's the thing. When I worked years with Sandy, my vocabulary grew to leaps and bounds.
Right.
And
right.
Now I'm regressing with you.
Well, yeah.
Never would I have said what I just said.
Yeah.
If not.
What you just
multiple
said
years spent with you
makes absolutely no sense.
No
and we're
sense.
All dumber have that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Have you ever?
Have you ever been rejuvenized? Because I'll tell you what, that'll get you going.
So the connectivity between Michael
the
Malone.
Connectivity.
See, darn you, Mark Schlereth.
What are you
darn
doing?
You. What have you
Ben,
done to me?
Can we rewind this whole thing, Ben? Go.
Go. Mark, you know the dynamics of a team. You've been around successful teams, and I think even if you play a different sport, you can really recognize the connectivity that exists between Michael Malone and his players.
Absolutely. My goodness.
Thank
the Lord.
What the heck happened there?
I don't know what is going on.
I don't know.
I do know, but. In that incredibly large melon of yours. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that got confused in there.
I know.
But anyhow, that's the thing. You know, the thing about that team, and this has been my experience on the championship and the playoff teams that I've been a part of. The connected nature, the relationships that are built, the sacrificial nature of a football team or a basketball team or a baseball team. There are teams, like, take it to baseball. There are teams that you look at and that third hitter or that fourth hitter gets up, and if it calls, you know, if the situation calls for laying down a bunt and moving runners over and we're in a tight game, you know, is that guy who's your big knocker, is he willing to do those things? And there are a lot of baseball teams where that guy's like, that ain't my job, I ain't doing that. And then there are some guys that will do whatever it takes to win baseball games, you know, to put themselves in that position. And I understand that normally in normal circumstances, you're not gonna take the bat out of your three or your four guy. But the point being is, what are you willing to do for us as a team, as opposed to you being served? How are you willing to serve your teammates? How are you willing to sacrifice to make sure that we put the best product out there? And Michael Malone seems to have that with this basketball squad, that they're for one another. And he impressed this upon me during training camp. He's impressed upon me in our conversations during the regular season that this team really loves being together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, you know, it's, we make so much out of talent, and, you know, and everybody is like, one of the topics today on television for me was, what's Dave Gettleman's plan, and how can, you know, in New York Giants, and how could you trade Odell Beckham Jr. and you know, just on and on and on with all this baloney, you know? And I'm telling you what, the one thing to me that's more important than talent, it's more important than anything else, it's your willingness to sacrifice for one another. And if you, I don't care how talented you are, if you don't have that, you just will never reach your full potential.
And it was fitting that the clinching win came in Boston against the Celtics team that everybody was putting automatically in the NBA Finals this year. But you know why they have, they've been the most underachieving team in the NBA. You know why?
Right.
They don't play together. They don't like each other. They've got guys with own agendas. They've got guys playing hero ball. You can tell they don't like playing with each other. And it was perfect to watch that game last night, because the difference between the two teams, it was just coming right out of your television screen. You could see it. You could see one team that clearly likes playing with each other, loves the idea of making the extra pass, gets as much satisfaction with a sweet assist than they do a basket, and the other team is all about their own agendas. And it was perfect, and it was fitting that is the win, that was the opponent, that was the game that gets them into the playoffs for the first time in 6 years. So, and now it's all about, do you surpass Golden State? Mark, the quick tail of the tape. 13 games left for each team. The Nuggets, 5 games at home, 8 on the road. Golden State, 7 at home, 6 on the road, and their road schedule is cream puff city. So,
yeah, I would actually rather have the tougher schedule. I think that the Nuggets schedule is more favorable because it's harder, and that will keep their players dialed in more than Golden State. So, you know what? I'll pull a Mike Evans here. I think they're in a good place to get that number one seed.